WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Governor Northam and other Democrats say they will push to move up the date for pot legalization. Democrats are also forming an Asian American and Pacific Islander caucus. And we also begin a series of reports on why campaign finance reform failed in this year's General Assembly. This is the WMRA Daily for Monday, March 29th. Governor Northam is expected to announce his amendments to the marijuana bill that passed the General Assembly today. He wants to push for legalization this year as opposed to waiting until 2024. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
When Governor Ralph Northam sent lawmakers his version of marijuana legalization back in January, it had an effective date of 2024 that was to build in time to stand up a new industry and regulate it. Now advocates are feeling hopeful they've been successful in persuading him to move up the timeline. Ash Nakana at the ACLU says Virginia can't wait until 2024.
Even with decriminalization, we are seeing the racial disparities continue to exist. And so delaying this prohibition and waiting till 2024 will harm Virginians every day, and especially Black and Brown Virginians.
Chelsea Higgs-Wise at Marijuana Justice says the governor has been hearing that message from advocates.
We don't deserve the policing at all. Even if it's just a ticket, even if it's a small fine. Right now, Virginians are being evicted for about $50 or less here in Richmond. So a $25 fine can absolutely change someone's world, especially in a pandemic.
Lawmakers and advocates say they're expecting the governor to move forward with full legalization for less than an ounce of marijuana on July 1st of this year. The governor's amendment, though, is not the end of the story. Lawmakers will still have to approve it when they meet in April. Michael Pope.
Virginia's House Speaker says she also supports moving up the date for legalization to this summer. Democratic Speaker Eileen Filicorn announced on Twitter that she will back an amendment to the bill with a July 1st legalization date. Filicorn says she'll also push for other amendments, including a provision that calls for people who are currently incarcerated for nonviolent marijuana-related offenses to have an opportunity for resentencing. Democratic lawmakers in the General Assembly have formed an Asian American and Pacific Islander caucus to advocate for those communities. Whitney Evans from VPM in Richmond reports.
Delegate Kathy Tran was emotional during a Friday morning press conference announcing the caucus. Her family came to the United States as refugees from Vietnam.
It's as if we have been so othered and that we're at the point that we're dehumanized and that you could be cruel against us, you could be a bully against us because nobody's going to stand up to help us.
The caucus is launching a listening tour in April to help gauge issues and concerns among the AAPI communities. Delegate Mark Kim, a Korean American, says it's not enough for Asian Americans to be represented, but their viewpoints must be included in Virginia's laws and policies. The organization Stop AAPI Hate reported 49 incidents in Virginia this year of violence targeting the community. Whitney Evans, WMRA News.
While college enrollment in Virginia has overall remained stable in the last year, a recent report from the State Council for Higher Education, or SHEV, found the pandemic has disproportionately impacted some students. The number of Black and Latino students at Virginia universities dropped by 1 and 2%, respectively. That's about 1,700 students combined. Tom Allison is with the council. He says it's important to pay attention to this change.
African American and Hispanic individuals in Virginia already have lower education attainment rates and enter college at lower rates, too. We really need to be gaining ground there and not losing it.
Allison says the report found some historically Black colleges and universities have seen significant losses, with enrollment dropping as much as 18%. One group that saw an increase was Asian students. Enrollment jumped among Asian students by about 5%, or nearly 1,900 students. Well, the spring election season is here, and candidates are trying to think of new and creative ways of getting their message out during a pandemic. Michael Pope has that story.
Now that Facebook has lifted its ban on political ads, the spring campaign season has moved online. Get ready for your newsfeed to be inundated with political ads from everything for the race for governor to your local city council race. Former Republican delegate David Ramadan, now at George Mason University's Schar School of Government, says digital ads can micro-target potential voters in a primary election in a way that television never could.
Online, you can target that only or likely voters of specific ideology or specific affinity to a subject matter will see those ads. And that's why that becomes much more important in a primary than in a general election.
Democratic strategist Ben Tribbett says television is here to stay, and there's a reason why it costs more money.
When people are watching television, they're focused in on the TV, and so while they didn't come for the commercials, they take them in at a much higher level. And this has been the case since TV was invented, that it's effective, it's by far the most effective, and nothing has changed that yet.
Tribbett also says the purpose of those digital ads might not be to target voters anyway, pointing to online data showing much of that advertising is actually aimed at wealthy donors in other states who might end up contributing money to statewide campaigns here in Virginia. Michael Pope.
Finally today, this was the year when state lawmakers approved some major changes, including legalization of marijuana and ending the death penalty. In other areas, though, reformers were disappointed. The General Assembly rejected several bills designed to reform utility regulation. They refused to remove special legal protections for police, and they retained the state's right to work law. They also failed to approve campaign finance reform. Virginia Public Radio's Sandy Houseman reports.
When it comes to campaign contributions, some say Virginia is the Wild West.
Virginia is an anything-goes state.
Stephen Spaulding is a lawyer with the clean government advocate Common Cause.
There's really no limit on how much an individual can contribute to a candidate, and that really puts Virginia in the minority of states.
And Ivy Main, an official with the Sierra Club's Virginia chapter, thinks it could explain some surprising votes. During the last session, she says, some lawmakers propose that consumers get refunds when they're overcharged on their electric bills. That seems a no-brainer, but Maine notes Dominion Energy gave nearly $1 million in campaign contributions to candidates for the General Assembly.
All of the utility reform bills went down to defeat, as well as a bill which would have allowed consumers to buy renewable energy from any seller. And that would have really opened up the market for renewable energy.
Dominion spokesman Rehan Dowdani calls reform proposals misguided, warning similar policies led to the winter's tragic events in Texas. He said the company's political contributions are paid by shareholders on behalf of 15,000 employees, adding that the firm is transparent and bipartisan. The Virginia Public Access Project reports that of the 11 biggest recipients of donations from Dominion in a legislature controlled by Democrats, only one is a Republican, Senator Tommy Normant, who, by the way, owns at least $50,000 in Dominion stock. Again, the Sierra Club's Ivy Main.
And in the subcommittee hearing these bills, he expressed great concern for the impact of utility reform bills on share prices for Dominion.
Reformers also pointed to the GEO Group, a for-profit company paid $2 million a month to manage the Lawrenceville Correctional Center. Relatives of inmates had complained about conditions there, claiming lockdowns were necessary because the prison was understaffed. Last year, the fiancé of one inmate reported a brawl when problems with the plumbing put everyone on edge.
There was at least a foot of water in the pod. Tensions have been high, and they all started talking smack to each other, and apparently the violence just exploded.
Two men ended up at VCU's medical center with serious injuries, but lawmakers refused to end the state's contract. The GEO Group calls public criticism outrageous, baseless, and egregious, dismissing any connection between flooding and fighting at Lawrenceville. Citing its long-standing partnership with the Commonwealth, GEO says it supports candidates who recognize the important role we play. The firm gave $35,000 to candidates for the General Assembly last year. Attorney David Toscano, who served 14 years in the House of Delegates, says campaign donations may not buy votes, but they often purchase access. And in a legislature of part-time lawmakers with limited resources, that can be especially valuable.
sometimes it enters the mind of legislators. They say, oh, yeah, this person's been a very good contributor. Maybe I should take their call. You have to get your information wherever you can, and sometimes that comes in the form of lobbyists coming to visit with you about a piece of legislation or a perspective they have about a bill.
So how concerned should voters be about corporate campaign contributions? And when might lawmakers be willing to regulate political donors? We'll get answers to those questions in our next report. I'm Sandy Houseman.
In tomorrow's follow-up, we will hear from former Charlottesville delegate David Toscano. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Monday.